Hello and welcome to The Low Point, the podcast that helps us all feel a little less alone. My name is Matt Penna and I am your host, and I'm excited. This is the first ever episode of the podcast. It's about a year in the making with trying to figure out all the tech stuff and all the logistics of doing a podcast, and I'm so excited that we finally got it going. And I couldn't be more excited for who our first guest is today. You know him from his show that he has toured nationally and has been featured on the This American Life podcast solo. It's Gabe Malika. Gabe is an incredible comedian and storyteller and just a wonderful human being. He's the best. If you don't already know him, you're going to love him on this show. And we talk about his low point, which is the premise of his solo show, Solo. And it's about a friendship breakup. So, you know, a lot of people out there, I'm sure, can relate to it. And we really get into it. It's a ton of fun. Just a few things I wanted to plug up top. First and foremost, follow me, if you don't already, on social media, at Matt Penna Comedy. That's on YouTube, TikTok, and Instagram is where I'm posting the most. Also, please, I implore you, sign up for my email list. And not just for me, if there are any comedians out there who you really like, sign up for their email list. It makes such a difference. It's how you communicate to the people that are interested to see all of the wonderful work that you're doing. For me in particular, I'd love it if you could sign up for the email list, because that is where I'm going to be giving updates on the upcoming solo show workshops that I'm doing this upcoming spring for my show, which are going to be a ton of fun. So please sign up for the email list if you haven't already. You can do that via my link tree in all of my social media bios and descriptions, so you can see it there. We filmed the podcast at Symposia Bookstore in Hoboken, New Jersey. It's a wonderful organization where it's a not-for-profit bookstore. They sell used books, and their mission statement is not simply to encourage reading in the community. It's also to build community in Hoboken. It's a wonderful organization. And even if you don't live in Hoboken, you can support. You can go on their Amazon page, which I will post a link to in my link tree. So again, you can access my link tree via all those social media bio descriptions. I'll post a link there. But you can go on their Amazon page, and just the next time you're thinking about getting a book, just stop by that page first, see if they have it. The books are super cheap because they're used, so very affordable, and it's just a wonderful way to support an organization, even if you don't live in Hoboken. Few things to plug for Gabe. Gabe's email list as well, and social media at Gabe Malika. Sign up for those. Again, you can find the links in his link. You can find the links to those in his social media bios. Very important, he is doing the New York City Fringe Festival April 6th, 11th, 14th, and 18th. He's working out his new solo show, Horse Lawyer, there. It's going to be a ton of fun. I've already seen the show he's working on, I believe, three times, and it's incredible. So you're not going to want to miss it. Go on the New York City Fringe Festival website for tickets and search Gabe Malika. You can look for them there. And also just reach out to him via his email list or DM him on Instagram. Ask him to bring Solo, his current show, to your town if you haven't seen it already. It's incredible. It's awesome. I feel like I'm saying incredible too much, but that's okay. It's the first promo we're doing on here. But yeah, guys, thank you so much for listening. Again, this has been a project I've been working on for quite some time, so I'm excited to finally put it out there, see how it goes. And without further ado, let's get low. Gabe, my guy, how are we doing?
I'm good. I'm happy to be here.
Dude, we're podding. We're doing it.
We are just two guys who look the same, doing a podcast in Jersey. We should be arguing about Pop-Tarts or things that are going to go viral.
Absolutely. But we're not going to do that today.
No, we're going to be thoughtful, sensitive men.
We're going to be sensitive. Gabe, before we get started, I need to pay you a compliment, because I saw, for those watching on YouTube or listening on Spotify, the whole reason that we met was I found you on Instagram, through your one man show Solo, and I was in such a terrible mood when I went to see your show. I was and don't worry, this is going to be a compliment.
No. Believe me, I'm in a bad mood all the time. And so the things that get me out of him are usually food related, but I'm glad it was a show.
It was. No, same here. And so I went to your show. I was having a terrible boss at the time. I went home from work, and your show reminded me that live performance and great art can be really healing.
Hell yeah.
And dude, it's so amazing.
Thank you.
And
where did you see it? You saw it at Soho Playhouse or Connolly?
I saw it at Connolly.
Yeah. Okay.
And it was, I mean, it's incredible. And you've been touring it now for how long?
Oh my goodness. So it ran off Broadway and we extended a bunch, which was not expected. We were supposed to do 8 shows off Broadway and we ended up doing 80 shows.
That's
which was
incredible.
Crazy.
Incredible.
And so I've been touring it sort of like on and off the whole time, kind of like where people will have me. But yeah, it's been like a year since I like quit my job and like am touring it.
Yeah.
And I've sold a lot of tickets in some places. Minneapolis, you know who you are. Sunday night in Minneapolis, best night of my life. And then like I've also sold like very few tickets. So like I've had the experience of like highs and lows of just like being on the road. And it's very vulnerable when it's like a story from your life that you're telling and you're like, oh, like nobody's here. Or the opposite, which is like, who are all these people? Like, how did they find me? I had this experience recently at Penn State where there's a bartender like next to the theater, and I overheard her asking like an 80-year-old guy. It was like, oh, have you seen this comedian before? And I was like, no, he's not seen me before. This is like the first thing I've done. The idea that he's like, yeah, I love Instagram, you know, is like very funny to me. But yeah, so to answer your question, about a year.
No, it's so incredible. It's such a great show. So if you're listening to this, please go out and see it. Follow Gabe on social media. We're going to plug all your stuff up top. But I appreciate you so much coming on. This is the first episode. So we're going to call it The Low Point, and it's just a podcast where, you know, I feel like, especially on social media, everyone is just talking about their high points. Everyone's, you know, it's a highlight reel.
Sure.
But, you know, let's get some stuff out there. Let's talk about some crap things that have happened to you, you know? Like, you know, the whole premise is that, you know, we'll talk about it, what happened, where you were. And the main thing is, how did you grow from it? Because that's really, I think, what drives it. So,
it's a good topic for a podcast. I remember we went to the same high school. We'll get into this, I'm sure, at some point. But I remember in high school telling a girl in Mr. Rebellini's AP Lit class.
Oh, loved Reb.
Great man. Reb, if you're listening, love you, dude. I was talking to some girl next to me. I remember her name, but I won't say.
Sure.
And I said something like, oh, like there are days, like not like horrible things, but there are days when like I would rather something like kind of bad happen and like I learn from it, or like I like get out of it, then like nothing happened and it'd be boring.
Yeah.
And she was like, I could not feel more differently. Like, she was just like, I don't want anything bad. And like, I don't want bad things to happen either.
Of course.
But like, I do think for someone who makes solo shows, like sometimes they're helpful, or like you learn from them, and it's those moments where you like take stock in your life sometimes.
Yeah.
Where like the good stuff, like sometimes you get swept up in it and then you want more.
Of course.
But like low points in your life, I think they're important to take stock of. Hopefully not traumatic, hopefully like just like slightly bad.
And I think too, I think the great thing, I mean, the whole reason I, you know, got into comedy too is just I think it's at its core, I think what it does is it makes us all feel a little less alone.
Mm.
And I mean, your show did that beautifully. For those that don't know, it's about a friendship breakup.
Yeah.
So I mean, do you want that to be the low point we discussed? I mean, we talked about a few.
Yeah, we can talk about that low point for sure. So the show is about a friendship breakup I had in my 20s with my best friend from college, and it was one of those moments. We can get into the story, of course, but like it was one of those moments when you have a friendship breakup, which is, I found as I've toured it around the country, all the time people are like, oh my god, I never hear people talk about like how sad a friendship breakup can be, or how like a relationship breakup, there's a million songs, movies, there's like, oh, you're gonna meet the next person, you know, 500 Days of Summer style, like, and her name's gonna be Autumn and you'll have moved on, and like that stuff exists for romance for sure. But a friendship breakup is sort of one of those things that I think not exclusively, but particularly for men, it's like, oh, is anyone talking about this?
No,
like,
exactly,
I felt like
yeah.
I'm the only person who's talking about this. It felt like, I'm sure that's not true. I'm sure somebody would be like, I wrote a folk song about it or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we can talk about it. So where should we start? I had a best friend from college.
Yeah.
And we went to Hamilton College, small liberal arts school. And we were, I don't know, I know you went to Binghamton. For me, the point of college was to just like stay up late with my friends and like mess around.
Yeah.
Did you have that? Like I majored in like acapella and staying up late, you know, with a minor and like mozzarella sticks. Do you know what I mean? Like it wasn't bullshit. Like I felt like we were like having real discussions. heartfelt, sort of like fun topics. We did you see? Have you seen Team America: World Police?
You know no, movie? I haven't seen that movie.
Okay,
no.
Are we swearing on this? Are we being vulgar?
We can, sure.
Okay,
yeah.
No, I don't want to demonetize you or whatever.
No, it's all good.
Do I really want to talk about this? This is sort of fun. We would stay up late, and there's a scene in Team America: World Police where it's basically a stand-up bit where they're like, there's three types of people in the world. There's dicks, pussies, and assholes, and everyone fits into one of those categories. And they like basically like make a treatise on like what kind of person is what kind of person.
Sure.
And we stayed up late one night, creating dick, pussy, asshole as a spectrum.
Oh my God.
And like placing different people on it. So it's like, I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of like dick, pussy. And like, I'm not much of an asshole. Like, assholes shit on people and dicks fuck. Pussies are sensitive. And so, like, you could do it with anything, right? You could do like strong, sensitive, and then like disengaged or whatever. Like, you could sub out the words to be like less heteronormative. But we would do stuff like that, and we would like listen to Les Mis. So there was a real like, I feel like this is like
what a spectrum.
Modern masculinity is like, yeah, like we watch football, but like we'll also watch RuPaul or
and
something.
That's, I think that's such a beautiful thing about modern masculinity, just in general, is like there is room for soft boys, and that's, you know what I mean. It's like it used to, because. Oh my God, I love, obviously, you know, I'm a huge Gary Goldman fan.
The best.
And
the king.
His, oh my God, he does jokes about how when he was growing up in the Great Depression, there were no Paul Rudds.
Yeah.
And it's so true. But
I went to that special. I was there.
Oh my God, I was there too.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah. Oh my God, that's so
hilarious.
It's wild. Of course we were there.
Of course we were there. Yeah. Who else was at Gary Goldman's Great Depression? That makes there's. Winning isn't everything, it's the only thing. Oh. What about collage? I was like, what about collage might be the most succinct joke of all time. What about collage is like such a banger.
Are you going to his new solo show, Grandiloquent?
Yeah, I'm going to go. I'm definitely going to go.
We're going up. Taylor and I are going opening night. So
great. I'm going to get a ticket.
So
this is the whole point of podcasts is tangents about Team America and Gary Goldman. So we'd stay up late and like, I felt like that conflict or that that we had so many different interests that we would just as easily like smoke cigarettes and like throw a baseball around, but then also like have thoughts about musical theater or whatever. And there's a small crew of us. In the show, I sort of make it feel like it's only me and Tim.
Sure.
The reality is like there was a couple more of us poking around. People who in my life have been like, what about me? I'm like, I know. It just like works better if it's only the two of us in a room. But Tim and I had for sure a strong relationship. But at the time, at least. And so we had this really strong relationship. And then eventually he brings me to a summer camp to work with kids with chronic illnesses. It was a Paul Newman camp.
Right.
And one of the nice, it's a beautiful place to work because like the stakes are really high, right? There's, and everybody who works at summer camp like feels like the stakes are high. They always say like a day at camp feels like a week or a day at camp feels like 3 or 4 days because you're just like, you're living with each other, you're on top of each other, it's like all consuming. And then like you add in the element of like, oh, some of these kids like pass away. Like some of these kids like don't live a long life or at their home life isn't great or their parents aren't equipped to take care of their medical needs and their siblings and money. Like the people you meet at this place are kind of all unbelievable. And so it's a really meaningful place to work. And so when you work with somebody there and you have a connection with somebody at a place like this, it's like really, really special. And so he brought me to work there. And that's sort of like a big leap of faith to bring your like buddy to work at a place like this. In my mind, it was a pretty, for lack of a better word, like intimate thing to do. It's like, hey, come into this world that like I've cultivated that is mine and be a part of it. And I talk in the show about how he was like really good at camp. Like he'd wake up kids in the middle of the night and feed them Taco Bell stuff like that.
Right.
And so it's cool to like watch somebody be really good at something.
Yeah.
And long and the short of it is like I meet this woman. We're sort of together. And Tim introduces us and me and this woman, Kate, and we're together at camp. And it's sort of like a camp romance. And it's really special because when you meet somebody at camp, again, I don't know, like when you meet somebody and you're working at a camp for sick children, there's a part of you that's like, I will never be this attractive again. Like I'm like wiping children's asses in wheelchairs. Like I'm a saint. Like there's a part of you that's like, oh, what am I going to like become an accountant? Like I'll never be like, I don't know. There's something that sort of takes over. And, like, you feel romantic about, like, the work you're doing and the people you're with. And sure. It all feels very, like, special and, like, outside the real world. Are you a camp person?
I was a camp. I went to Boy Scout camp, so something completely different.
Sure.
You have, like, all these, like, lovely stories about helping people at camp. I just remember there was one kid at my camp who took Axe body spray and put it in front of a flamethrower, like a lighter, and just made a flamethrower out of it.
Oh, my God.
And I remember our scoutmaster was so tired of all the crap people were doing. He just looked at him and then just pretended like nothing happened. It was just like, you know, and we took showers with like hoses and things like that. And it was just like, so definitely a different camp experience.
Sure. But all camp experiences are bizarre. Like, you're like, oh, I took a shower with a hose. There were no rules. We're making flamethrowers.
And I remember tetherball was so popular at camp. Like, that was the ranking of how cool you were at camp, was how good were you at tetherball.
Yeah, there's always a ball related, an alt non-competitive, like, or like for us it was Foursquare.
Okay. Great game.
Foursquare is great. I went to camp as a kid in high school with all my high school friends. So,
what a blast!
I was basically like, what if we had a 6-day sleepover and just invaded this camp? So we would like take over. They gave us our own cabin.
Yeah.
And we would like, we were delinquents. Like, we would get in trouble. We threw milk at a cabin, like cartons of milk, and like, God, we were just like the worst kids in the world. So I always, whenever I had a misbehavior at camp, there was always a part of me that's like, you earned this. Like, like you behaved, you were a choir boy and you behaved poorly and now you're getting your comeuppance because, you know, you tortured adults. Anyway, so I'm dating this woman at camp. And I get a job teaching in Scotland. I'm giving you the... Normally, this is 85 minutes of comedy.
No, of course. But one thing I want to touch on that I think is, like, so fascinating during this time is, like, obviously, we're going to get to the low point of this situation, but these are such formative years in anybody's life.
Yeah.
And so everything is amplified by, like, 10 times.
Oh, my God.
You know what I mean?
It's I'm sensitive now.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like I'm only learning... that I am I read a book called Quiet about introverts.
Oh, that's okay. And no, I've never read it.
My sister gave it to me. And there's a whole chapter in the beginning about like kids who are highly reactive to things as kids.
Sure.
They're considered high reactive, and that's like a pretty good indication that they're sensitive in some way and that they will likely be introverted in some other way. Where like some other people are not as reactive to their environment, to getting their hand stepped on or somebody saying something mean or whatever. And my sister gave me this book. It was a bestseller. It's like somewhat a popular...
And it's called Quiet?
Quiet, okay. Yeah. And I sent my sister a text I called her, we were talking on the phone, and I said something to her that she says to me all the time now, which is, apparently I just called her and went, turns out I'm a high reactive dog. And like, I'm a high reactive dog. I'm a high reactive dog is like my whole, that is my masculinity, which is like, I'm sensitive. I'm still going to call you dog to my sister.
Right.
But like, that's sort of my whole thing. But so yes, everything's amplified. Everything feels so big.
Oh my God.
High school, college, camp, all of it.
Oh my God. And I don't want to cut you off, but
I was just saying,
I just remember breakups too. We're just like,
that's the good stuff.
It's life ending, but I think we're setting you up. So
sure, sure. Well, what was your? Were you like a Dashboard Confessional breakup?
Oh my God!
What was your?
So my situation,
Elliot
like,
Smith,
like what college breakup.
Like what was? I'm curious. Like John Mayer. Like what was the? What kind of sad God. Song guy were you?
So there is a song. Oh my God! Believe it or not, shocker. Taylor Swift does a song.
Queen.
And I can't remember, it's, oh my God, I'm forgetting the name of this song, but it's, I would listen to it nonstop. It's going to come to me, but I forget the specific lyrics. This is like
it's
horrible.
It's not All Too Well, is it?
No, it's not. But
it's not
but
Jake Gyllenhaal.
No, it's not that one. This girl did not steal my virginity. But
and not send back the scarf or whatever.
Exactly. But no, and the worst part was we, in our situation, it was a year of on and off. Which, if you are in an on and off, get out of there.
You're off.
You're off.
Off if you're not off.
If you're not on, just stop.
Someone else will get you off.
Yes.
You need to be off.
And this is also, too, this is a tangent on a tangent, but like my girlfriend and I, we're watching Sex and the City right now.
Great.
Have you watched that show?
Not straight through. I've seen episodes.
Do you know about the whole Aiden situation?
No.
Listen,
I know Big. I know a couple of
You know
other
Big,
a
couple yeah, whatever. Yeah, yeah. But I just got to tell you, man, it's like watching that now, it's like, Carrie, what are you doing? Because she, get the Gabe, like, okay,
imagine a friend comes to you and they're like, okay, so I was in the cabin with my current boyfriend, Aiden, and my ex called me, so I invited him over to the cabin with my current boyfriend. By the way, cheated on my current boyfriend with this guy that she invites over. I'm like, Carrie, I can't help you.
Yeah, you've put that on yourself.
Exactly. It's like, yeah. And you're just, I don't like her. Messy. And it's, yeah. You know, it's just messy, but... All of this to say,
no, that's good.
You are at camp with your friend Tim and this girl. Was it Kate?
Kate, who I'm dating, okay, yeah.
At the time.
And I got a job in Scotland teaching. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I have to move to Scotland. It's the only job I get. So I moved to Scotland and Kate and I are like trying to keep the relationship going.
Sure.
And we're like,
sure.
Oh, we'll see each other at New Year's. Like Kate and Tim and a bunch of counselors are going to come visit for New Year's in Scotland. So like I'm thinking like this whole time, like, I'm living in Scotland. I'm trying to work. Like, I'm working in a school. Yeah. It's my first job ever. It's not a serious job, but it's a job.
And what was the job?
I was like a teaching fellow at this high school. So, okay. Like, basically, I would go on all the school field trips with the Scottish children, K through 12. So, I would go on high school field trips, and I would go on, like, fifth grade field trips.
Oh, that's cool.
Overnight, day trips, like, all that stuff. And then I taught a class on American culture. Like, bullshit. Like,
okay,
The Simpsons.
Yeah. Like, okay,
I
gotcha.
Covered, like... You know, 9/11, this, all the big stuff. The
Simpsons and 9/11.
Which, like, it turned out, like, they were all like, we know about this. Like, like they did not need me for that at all. And I helped the kids write some college essays, stuff like
right.
that.
Right, which you still do, by
which
the way.
I still do plug on the side. Like, hey, listen, that's probably month of November. That's the moneymaker, let me tell you. But, so Kate and I are sort of together and we're trying to make it work. And eventually Kate calls me and she's a senior in college. And a varsity athlete. So she's like very busy trying to make this like long distance thing work. And eventually she's like, hey, this is not working. And, you know, I'm upset because, again,
everything,
the camp relationship, you think your whole world is ending. Like, it's so bad. And, you know, I call Tim right away. I'm like, dude, like, we broke up. I'm so sad. And I remember I have an email from Tim. He's like, I'm so sorry about Kate. Like, that sucks. Like, I'm here for you, whatever. So, Kate doesn't come for New Year's to Scotland, but Tim and a couple of counselors come visit.
Right, okay.
And we get to Scotland, and things are weird between Tim and I. We're, like, not having a good time. He's sort of like, I have a flat, and then around the corner is another counselor from camp who has a flat. And when Tim gets there, he, like, sets up shop, like, in the other guy's apartment. And there's a part of me that's like, why are you staying with Connor?
Yeah.
Like, that's weird. Like, no one's staying in my place.
And like, this is like your best friend at this point. This is like your number one.
It depends on who you ask, but yes, absolutely. And so I'm like, that's weird. And we're kind of hanging out all week and like, we're just sort of distant. And like, I'm kind of, in the show, I do a thing about how like, we work best. We don't like work best in the group. We work best outside of the group so we can talk shit about everyone in the group. Like, we're those types of friends. And so part of me, like, the whole time is, like, hoping that we will get some time to just, like, have a guy one-on-one
time. Yeah, just,
like,
one-on-one, yeah.
Yeah, because, like, that's where we work best. And New Year's happens, midnight, and then...
Are you guys drinking?
We're drinking, we're partying. And then at, like 2, 3 in the morning, the two of us, he's like, hey, man, why don't we go to the casino, just you and I?
Right.
And so we get to the casino, and we lose a ton of money. Like, we're terrible gamblers.
Oh, God. What'd you play?
We played, this is a great question, we played blackjack and roulette.
Okay.
And we lose a bunch. And we walk back to my flat at, like, 4 in the morning. And I'm saying flat. We walk to my apartment. And we're in my apartment, and he's just like, hey, man, Kate and I are together.
He tells you on the walk home from the casino.
He tells me in the apartment.
At 4 in the morning
while
you're drunk.
While we're, kind of sobering up. But yes, I was like making pizza bagels. Like, that's what he told me.
Wait, and hold on a minute.
Yeah, I was making pizza bagels. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I was preheating the oven to make pizza bagels.
Oh, okay.
It's even worse. They weren't even in there. Had they been in there, they would have burned.
What a horrible association for such a wonderful snack.
Yeah,
I mean, I know.
I love food so much that that's one I've gotten over. Like, I can now eat a pizza bagel and be fine, which really is more damning than I think I'm proud of.
It took years of exposure therapy.
It took years, yeah.
Just
yeah,
really
yeah.
making pizza bagels over and over again.
It's so funny because, like, there are things that I associate that with, like, like songs or an article of clothing. Like, oh, I was wearing this when this happened or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But pizza bagels are so good. They're so pure. Pizza in the morning, pizza in the evening.
Yeah. Your brain made the disassociation. It was like, we can't do this.
Yes. Yeah. They're too, you know, pizza rolls. I'm all in on all frozen pizza based bite sized food. So he tells me this and like, it's awful. Like, yeah. And there's, and you're confused and you're tired and you're like, what is happening? And we have this sort of like emotional moment where we're like arguing and then we kind of like chill and like, he kind of like explains what's going on. And what is true, what is very true is that like right before he left, I said, do you have enough money? Because we just lost so much money at the casino.
Right.
And he goes, yeah, like, I don't need a loan from you. And I said, no, you're paying for my therapy. And I gave him a hug, which, like, I consider, like, my first joke ever. Like, the first joke of the rest of my life. And, like, I thought it was so funny to, like, diffuse the situation.
Sure.
Even a little bit. Even sure. Just to be like, oh, like, I have jokes, you
yeah.
know?
And had you gone on stage at this point?
No.
Okay.
And so before he leaves, I hug him, okay. Which I'm very proud of.
Yeah. Which is very big, especially in your 20, 21?
22. Yeah.
22. And
yeah.
Like, again, it's just because you don't have those skills to deal with it yet.
No,
like,
no.
So to really come out, I mean, I really have to commend you. I mean, that is really impressive, Gabe, that you're able to hug him in that moment.
Yeah. You know, I think part of it is just being a musical theater person. I think also, and I think musical theater person, like
Stephen Sondheim trained you for this.
Yeah, yeah. I think, yeah, I was for sure proud of that. I think also I'm somebody that like doesn't like to go to bed angry.
Gotcha.
You know?
Okay.
Where I'm somebody that's like, I just want everything to like sort of like be okay. And I can't live in the uncertainty that it's not okay. So I want everything to be okay, like, all the time.
It's almost causing you more anxiety if it's not resolved.
Yeah, some sort of resolution temporarily. And so he leaves, and we kind of, like, stopped being friends after that. But we worked at camp together. But
The
following summer.
Oh, wow.
Which was, like, crazy.
Yeah. And were you talking, like, while you guys were at
kind
camp?
Kind of. Okay. We never really, like, hashed it out. But so the low point is like, I'm in Scotland. I just came back to Scotland from Christmas. So I have to now spend 6 months in this country.
Right.
Away from my family.
Because you had done the first semester. You hear the news.
Yeah.
And now we're in the spring semester of Scotland.
Yeah. And I have to be there. And I don't want to be there. And I'm lonely.
Yeah.
And
oh
my other
God.
Friend group, they're all, it felt like the other people I knew in Scotland were all Team Tim. You know?
What?
Yeah.
They took his side?
A couple people who lived there did. I feel like more people were Team Gabe, but there are certainly people in my life who are like, Gabe's too sensitive, like he's overreacting. But that's not everybody, but certainly some people.
But also coming from someone who is also so sensitive, like that's your worst nightmare, is people being like, he's too sensitive.
Yeah, and you know what? It's interesting. I'm in therapy now. It's something I've been talking about.
Sure, yeah.
Which is sensitivity. Because on one hand, it's also like really valuable to me.
100%.
You can't write jokes. You can't be Gary Goldman.
No. And he, oh my goodness, he's so
sensitive.
But yeah. It's one of the reasons like we love him is that he, I mean, to be that sensitive and vulnerable, especially like on stage and specials and stuff.
Yeah.
Is so admirable. And he also like, I feel like by him doing that on stage, it like allows for other comedians to also like open up and be vulnerable.
Yeah.
But I just have to tell you, Gabe, like something that just came to mind, and I don't share this with like a lot of people, so like I'm like sharing it on the pod.
Sure.
There was a moment I remember, and I feel like you're gonna get this because it like really, it's so such like a core memory in my head. Like growing up, I was so sensitive, and I wanted a girlfriend so bad growing up. Which like I feel like you're nodding. I feel like you did too.
I relate to that.
Yeah. So like so bad, I used to like every single girl. So in our friend group, there was like the guys, and very like 11-year-old boy, we did something like, you know, we had a journal, and I'm not proud of this at all, but like we would be like, you know, best hair, girls, like whatever, you know.
Oh, superlatives,
best.
Sure.
Yeah,
sure,
superlatives
sure.
For like our girlfriends that like we hung out with. So the girls, to get back at us, did the same for us. And like
never good.
For other guys, it was like, oh, always a dick, like always mean, like whatever. For me, they said, we don't think Matt's ever actually liked someone in his life.
Whoa.
And that was so deep. I remember.
They saw right through
Oh, my God. Like, right through. And talk about cutting to the core.
Yeah, that's not like, oh, we don't like his hair or the way he dresses. Like, it's not superficial.
No.
They went for, like, we can tell that you don't even really like us.
Yeah.
That is damning.
And it's like, we were 11. We were 11.
That.
It still hurts.
Yeah.
It's still, because I carried that with me, like, through college and everything. Like, I didn't grow
would
out
you
of
be
that.
In a, you'd have a crush on somebody and be like, do I even like this person?
100%. I will give you, oh my God, I'm giving you like, this is, but again, point of the pot, we got to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
I remember I was so lost, and this is also in my situationship with the girl I was on and off with in college.
Yeah.
I went to a wedding, a friend of mine, and I thought I liked her. Uh-huh. So, like, I spent the whole wedding, we spent the whole weekend together, and it's like, great. There's literally fireworks at this wedding. So, it's like one of those scenarios. So, I tell her at the end of the wedding, I like you, like everything. And she's like, I don't really think you do, Matt. And, like, she put me down easy.
She also knew that.
She also knew that. And then to prove it even more, and this is, I'm a flawed individual.
Yeah.
I went back to the person that I was on and off with. Like, right after. Because, again, I think it was just, like, it was more about, like, filling a hole, I think, than actually, like, liking these people.
Sure.
But, oh, my God, man. It's, like, that really...
Yeah. Do you even really like this person?
Yeah.
That is, I mean, particularly early on in your life.
Jesus, yeah.
Or is this just, like, the prettiest person that will talk to
me? Exactly.
Which, like, you know, I've certainly been there. Well, I'm going to get moderately pretentious and talk about Marcel Proust, but there's a scene in, so Marcel Proust wrote In Search of Lost Time, and one of the books, the most popular one, is called Swan's Way.
Okay.
And it's about this, like, sort of like aristocratic, high society guy who becomes, like, totally obsessed with this prostitute. And everyone in his life is like, why are you obsessed with her? Like, she's not who you should be with. Like, there's all these other women, there's all these other parties, whatever. And what I love about the book, spoiler alert for Marcel Proust's Swan's Way, In Search of Lost Time, is you read, like, hundreds of pages about how he's obsessed with this woman.
Sure, sure.
Totally. He's outside her window. He's obsessed. And what I love about the book is that the whole book is set up for a joke, which is, like, the last line of the story is, like, she wasn't even my type.
Oh.
And it's so, I'm like, so I remember good. In college being like, this is a bit. Like,
yeah,
this is
yeah.
300 pages
right.
of setup and one punchline.
Oh. That is so good.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I don't think that's what other people love about Proust, but that's what I like it, I think.
But no, that's a good segue. So we go back. You're in Scotland. You're alone, which, again, is when you were alone in your early 20s. I mean, like, reach out to me, man, because that is hard.
Yeah, it's a raining country. It's January.
Oh God, of course it's raining.
Yeah, it's
you couldn't be alone in, like, Cancun or something.
Yeah, I know. Well, that in some ways that could have been worse. ever been sad at Disney? It's miserable. I had breakup reverberations once in Disney, and I was like, I'm in the happiest place on earth. I'm so sad.
Oh God. you walked through Dr. Seuss Land.
Yeah,
well, that's not Disney, but
yes,
Universal,
yeah, yeah. You're at Epcot, and you're eating something vaguely racist at Epcot, and you're sad. But yeah, I'm in Scotland, so this is the low point. If we're talking low points, I'm in Scotland, and I work, the work schedule was like once every 7 days I'm off, like once every seven, they ran on a 7 day schedule. So like week one would be 1 through 5 and then week two would be day 6, day 7, day 1, day 2, day 3. So every 7 work days I'm off. And then the other days of the week, like either I get there late or I leave early. So I have tons of time to do other stuff.
Sure.
And I am just like waiting, like I'm just trying to pass the time.
Yeah,
I'm trying to do stuff. So like, I just start. I bought Rubik's cubes, and I would just walk Edinburgh doing Rubik's cubes like over and over and over again.
That is so interesting.
And I just think I just needed something to like occupy my hands, and my time. And it's the first time I ever bought notebooks and drank coffee, and sat in coffee shops.
You had never drank coffee at this.
Never had coffee in my
life.
What
a time to get going.
Get into coffee.
Oh my God!
Because I was just like, I need to feel the thing about writing jokes and the thing that the reason why I call doing comedy as like an art form is not because it's inherently like it's like writing a novel or it's like painting. The reason I call it an art form is because of the preparation it takes to go do it.
Sure.
The writing, the listening, the talking ideas through with people, like that's the craft of it.
Yeah.
And so for the first time in my life, I needed to kill all day. And so I bought these notebooks, which I still have, and I would go to open mics or I'd get these gigs. I got like weird gigs early on.
In Scotland?
In Scotland, yeah. Because like young comedians, like back then, it was like 2015, there was only one club. And you could get up on Monday night, it was called Red Raw, and you could do 5 or 7 minutes. And I had been on stage my whole life. I'd been in shows in high school and in college and stuff. So I was like comfortable on stage. So like at the beginning, like that really helps. And I was doing those shows and writing jokes for them and really like sort of baseline. Like one of my first jokes was how there's no diversity in Scotland. So I'm like, I walk around Edinburgh and I see a castle and I see a vault. I'd preface the joke by saying I'm from New York. And so Edinburgh is weird to me. So I walk around and I see a castle and I see a volcano. And I think to myself, where are all the black people? And years later, when Trevor Noah did a special on Netflix, he had a bit about how there's no black people in Scotland. Yeah. And I was like, that was my first bit.
Oh,
like we had
God.
The same topic, you know?
But isn't it early on? It's so encouraging when you see that. Because in the same way, like when I was first doing stand-up, I remember having an observation that I was like, oh my God, every woman is so much better looking than the man she's with.
Oh, yeah.
And that was on Judd Apatow's special on Netflix.
Yes.
And I remember like watching. I was like, oh my God, he articulated amazingly. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
But it's so encouraging early on. And Gabe, I just want to stop for a second. I want to like point out, it's like, here you were, right? It was like you had your best friend and this girl you were in love with at the time. And then it all just falls apart and you find comedy.
Yeah.
To which is you've
fill
made
the days.
And
a lot of it was listening to podcasts. I would listen to Pete Holmes.
Oh,
and just walk
you made
around.
It weird?
Yeah.
It's number one. Oh my God. It's really
it, like,
reason I'm doing this now.
Of course. That's why we're not editing. And we need you need a Katie. You start to do real well.
This is a low budget operation.
You're your own Katie.
There is a backpack on that chair over there.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, that's your Katie. That's his audio tech or whatever. So I would listen to that, and I remember, like walking around Edinburgh, just listening to. I had at that point still there was probably like a year and a half backlog of episodes. So like early Gerard Carmichael. From like 2014 where he's like, his advice was be an exposed nerve on stage. Like just be present.
Yeah.
Which it took him another 8 years to come out of the closet. Yeah. So I remember being like, in retrospect, I was like, oh, he was giving good advice, but I don't know if he was like taking it yet. But it's eventually Rothaniel, which comes out like 8 years later, he is an exposed nerve on stage, I feel like.
Yeah.
And so like, it's funny to hear like wisdom from people and then it takes them in their real life like a long time to come to that. But yeah, I mean, like listening over and over again to those pods. And I remember I listened, I probably shouldn't say who, but there was a 3-hour episode of that podcast with a comedian I did not like.
Okay.
And like didn't really care what they had to say and like didn't really love their perspective and didn't think they were that funny. And the episode ends, the 3-hour episode. And I remember being like devastated that it was over and being like, oh, like I didn't even like this person. Yeah. I'm sad that this is over. Like this stinks. But it made me, I always tell people this, but like I felt like I fell in love with New York while living in Scotland.
That's fascinating. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, because like just like people talking about like going to the clubs and like going to open mics and like Pete being like, I met Kumail at an open mic in Chicago and being like, oh, like who am I going to meet in New York? And now, you know, I eventually came back to New York and started doing a lot of mics and I wanted to do 100 sets in a year. That was my first goal. And then that turned into 300 sets a year, whatever. But like now I feel like I've met people at mics and shows who have been like on billboards and stuff or like, oh, that person who writes for SNL or whatever, The Daily Show, whatever. Like, oh yeah, I met them like in a back room. Like they're just a guy.
Crazy.
They're not intimidating anymore.
Oh my God.
And so, yeah, it was like, and what you don't realize before you start comedy is like, although all the stuff you're obsessed with, like Microbiglia and You Made It Weird and all those pods and stuff, when you move to New York and start doing comedy, you're like, oh, like everyone doing this was obsessed with that stuff too.
Yeah.
But podcasts feel so insular. Like if you're listening to this, you're probably not in a room with other people sitting around listening to it. You're probably by yourself.
Yes.
And
oh.
So it feels very, I have a funny story. Somebody told me this, you know, like the podcast Cumtown?
Yes. Yeah.
So I don't listen to that, or at least like when it was the three of them. But they would go on a stand-up tour, and somebody I knew, this is a story somebody told me secondhand, but they're like, somebody who worked at the club said that the website, when they announced that those three guys were going on tour to do stand-up, the site like sort of like crashed to sell tickets.
Okay.
Because everyone who bought tickets only bought a single ticket.
Oh my God.
And it was like 500 people who bought one ticket. It wasn't like, hey guys, Birbiglia's, Goldman's coming. Like, let's get a group of tickets. It's like, oh, all just like sweaty guys who are alone. And I was like, oh, like I actually like, there is something about that that like I kind of like, where like I would love that if everyone who came to my shows came alone instead of like two women in their 30s who were like, let's go see a solo show. This is normally comes to my shows.
Is that the demographic normal?
That the demographic during the first show was like, that was so great. My boyfriend would love that. Which like is so depressing because it's very hard to market theater to straight men.
Sure. That is very difficult. But the benefit of that is women are typically the ones that buy the tickets.
Yes.
So it's,
they have the organizing principle.
Yeah. So, you know, because men can't get stuff going.
No.
It's like, and going back to friendship, that's why so many friendships fail. I have a very good friend. I made a friend. I'm going to be 29 in February. I made a very close friend recently. We met here at the bookstore. Get this, okay? He's an excellent guy. Just class. Like, he comes over, he brings like a bottle of wine. You know what I mean? Like, he's like thoughtful.
Yeah.
The bar is very low for me. We met at this bookstore, you know, because a big thing Carmen does here at Symposium Bookstore in Hoboken, we're going to plug it
That's
up.
That's great.
She holds like a holiday party. He brings in this beautiful charcuterie board. And like, we end up like talking, stuff like that. But he would like text me to hang out. And like, you have to put in effort actively when you get into like your late 20s, early 30s. Because you're so busy, you're just like living your life and stuff like that. And also too, it's like you're not always in the mood to like meet new people because it takes energy. It really is. So, you know, thankfully like hanging out with him was like so easy, but like to get to that first hang, and like we had coffee by ourselves and stuff like that.
Sure.
It's, like,
it's a
know,
hurdle.
It's like, it really is. And meanwhile, women are on Bumble BFF. And that I'm so jealous of it.
That's incredible.
And I have no avenue to like talk about it or anything. And it's like, because this same guy was on Bumble BFF for men, and he actively had to write in his bio, please stop trying to have sex with me to gay men.
Hilarious.
And like, to me, that is the funniest thing in the world, where it's like, he's just earnestly trying to meet people.
Sure.
And he's just like trying to dodge all these gay men trying to have sex with them.
How quickly Bumble BFF goes from men trying to earnestly make friends to gay guys who are trying to convert straight men.
It's seen as a challenge.
Yeah. It's like, no, that's very funny. By the way, Bumble BFF, if you want to sponsor Solo or put it out as a special, by all means, I will absolutely take your money. I have not experimented with that feature. But yeah, no, it's exhausting. I feel like it's, you know, it's really funny. I used to live with a comedian, Igor Martinez. Very funny.
Oh my God. I love Igor. He's great. Follow him.
And you definitely follow Igor. Yeah. He's so, so funny. And we lived together, and like, I would walk his dog sometimes and like,
sure,
you know, as close as two roommates can be. And I was doing the show in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Okay.
And we were staying with this comic, Jeff Greenspan, who moved down there, who has like an apartment, and he hosts comics down there.
That's great.
And I get there and he's like, yeah, like the other guest room is going to be Igor Martinez. I was like, oh, we used to like live together in New York. We're buddies. And we were like hanging out down there, like getting lunch and walking around. And I was kind of like, oh, we had to go to Tennessee to hang out. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we've hung out more this weekend than when we would, like, live together.
Oh, my God. It has to be an event.
Yeah.
Like, it has to be, because that's the big thing. And that's why, like, I always say with, like, bachelor parties, especially, like, for men, you need an itinerary. You cannot go, because you will just sit in a living room all on your phones and you won't do anything.
It's the best thing in the whole world. So my friend Alexis and I made a sketch about this recently.
Yeah, yeah.
And it ended up, we didn't post it, but it ended up going like sort of viral on Reddit.
I love that.
On a page called Guys Being Dudes. Because my attitude is like, oh, we don't, as a friend group, like we sit around, we eat, we watch stuff.
Oh, I know this sketch.
Yeah. So that's our take. And like everyone in the Reddit is like, dudes rule. Like, we just want to like name baseball players and like do nothing. And it's true. And like, for me the other night, after my show, we ended up going to a diner, and I was like, there was like six or eight people, and I was like, this is the best. This is the only thing I want to do.
Right.
I've always wanted to do a bit. I've sort of tried to do it before, but like you can be a diner person or a bar person, and you have to sort of decide which one you are. And like some people drink so much that they think they're a bar person and then they become a diner person out of necessity.
Oh my God.
But like I'm a classic diner person. Like I just want to sit around and talk and drink coffee.
What's your order?
I went to a diner today with my cousin who writes for The Daily Show. We talk jokes. And he came to the show, or he watched the show the other night. I sent him a tape.
And
he gave me tags and stuff.
That's great.
Yeah, we have a lot of Fudgy the Whale material that we were going over.
Again, we're going to plug it up top, but Gabe's working on his new show, the Fudgy the Whale material I saw yesterday, 2 days ago.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Thank you. Yeah, we have a lot more tags now. Yeah. Sushi Grade Chocolate is a favorite. But today I had an omelet and a Diet Pepsi and was like the happiest person
great.
In the world.
A regular Western omelet? What are we doing?
Today I did bacon and American cheese.
Oh,
though
classic.
I did regret it later. I was like, I needed a vegetable.
It's tough, but in the morning, so good.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah,
it's a bacon, egg, and cheese, but you didn't have the bread. So it's
fine.
It's healthy. It's all
yes,
good.
Yeah.
My friends would make fun of me growing up because we would go to a diner.
What was your diner in Garden City?
We went to Carl Place a lot
when
it was
CPD.
Late because it was, yeah. So we went there a lot. We also went to the one that was by the high school. Remember it's
Sparta
now
Sparta Diner. At one point it was Sparta.
Now it's an Asian fusion restaurant. Is that the one we're talking
about?
Yeah.
They went in a few names.
Yeah, yeah. They just because they were like accessible, food was fine, but my friends would make fun of me all the time because I would want to go constantly. And every time
this
we
is why
would
we're
go
friends.
Exactly. Every time I would go, I would get a turkey club. And like everybody was like, get something different. I'm like, I can't. I would be like, today's the day I'm gonna get something different. I would get there, the waiter would be there. Just turkey club.
That's
I
such
can't
an
do
old
it.
Man order.
Oh,
that's so
but
funny.
But it's the best. A turkey club at a diner.
Yeah.
Not
well, that's
real
the
turkey.
The Mitch Hedberg. Yeah. Yeah. The club is formed. They put the toothpick in. The club is formed is a banger. God, that's so funny. Yeah, no, diners are like the only, like, I've always said if I do like late night TV, like if I do The Tonight Show or whatever, I'm like, oh, the watch party will not be at a bar or at a comedy club. It'll be at a diner with a television.
But that's where you want it.
Yes.
That's, you don't, come on.
Yes.
Especially for The Tonight, that's where
yes,
you want it.
Yes, that's the dream.
Just because you mentioned Mitch Hedberg, I heard Stephen Wright was on Pete Holmes' podcast.
Just listen.
You just listen? Do you remember the battery joke they do?
Yeah, turn the wrong way. Yeah.
Oh,
so so the joke is, the joke is what? So how does he set it up?
So he sets it up. He's Stephen Wright is at his grandfather's wake.
Yeah,
and he was thinking about his dead flashlight.
Yes. I'm looking at my grandfather's wake, and I started thinking about batteries.
Yes.
I started thinking about batteries, and I was like, maybe he's not dead. Maybe he's turned the wrong way.
That had me. I was in Port Authority alone, cackling.
You and the CEO shooter, just listening to comedy pods and playing the Pokemon card game. That's what I'm doing.
Are you playing that now?
The Pokemon trading card game?
Oh, my God.
Oh, am I playing?
Oh.
I'm were about... are you playing?
No, I got on the Pokemon Go train, and then I kind of like leveled off. That
so
was one
this
of those.
Is like a card game of Pokemon.
Okay.
Where you can battle your friends and collect... And like, I wouldn't say like I'm caught up on Pokemon. Like, I stopped playing Pokemon in fifth grade after
sure.
the Game Boy Color. But like, I don't know. All my friends are playing it. And it feels a little bit like the lottery.
You just play it on your phone?
Yeah.
Oh,
you like collect
fun.
Cards and trade and stuff. And anyway, that was a tangent.
Were you big into Yu-Gi-Oh? That was my thing.
No, I played Magic. Ugh.
Magic's fun. It's a very similar vibe. We played that. We talked about camp. That was a huge hit at Boy Scout summer camp.
I bet it was.
That
were
was,
you
oh
on camp
God.
On Long Island?
We went to camp in Pennsylvania. And I forget the name of the camp, but that was like a big thing. And
Garden City Boy Scouts?
Garden City Boy Scouts, Troop 56. Okay, so your low point. You find,
my low point. I find comedy. Thank goodness.
You find comedy.
And podcasts.
But this is what I really want the pod to be about, is because here you were, this low point, and you found what you've made a career out of. And what you're so... goddamn talented.
Oh, thank you.
As a compliment. I know you're like me and you can't take compliments. So
yeah,
I'm
like, oh, yeah.
Just going to keep throwing them at you. You know? But you're in Scotland and you find it. And now, I guess looking back at that time, and you talk about it in the show, what, I when you think back at that time, when you to that image of you walking around Scotland alone with a Rubik's Cube.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you think about that time in your life now?
In some ways, I'm like proud of it.
Yeah.
In that I learned, like, it's funny. The stuff I did then, which is like sit all day in a coffee shop, walk around,
sure.
call your friends, think, listen to podcasts, listen to stuff that makes you laugh, watch stuff. That's the thing that's the thing I do professionally. That's the thing that I do now. And so I didn't realize I was like training myself for that. I thought I was just sort of like coping or like trying to pass the time or something. And then you realize like those are the skills and those are the things now I do for fun. You know, like that's it started as this thing that like, you know, I'm just trying to get through the day. And there were certainly more depressive parts of that year. Like I remember I would walk home from work, from school, and I would buy like candy and like a root because I didn't really drink. I would buy like candy and a root beer and like a child. And it was like I was coming home from high school, but I was 22. And I remember this one, I bought a root beer that had like this weird like pull top. You'd like pull it. It wasn't like a can and it wasn't like a twist off. It was this weird thing. And in like this kind of glass bottle. And I was like in my bed opening this like precarious root beer. And I remember like it spilling on my laptop and my laptop shutting off.
Oh my God.
And being like on the verge of a breakdown where it's like, ugh, if my laptop doesn't work, like I can't, I'm not connected to the world.
Oh,
and
God.
I'm really alone. Ugh. So I had this like freak out. And it's so funny to have a freak out about root beer and a laptop and being in Scotland. But like, so like, I don't want to romanticize it too much. Like also it was a nightmare, but in terms of writing jokes and walking around, like in some ways I wish I had been more like gregarious and like joined like a running club and like made a bunch of friends and like done that kind of thing. And I tried to do some of that, but like I think it was my nature to sort of like retreat and then like recover and sort of and rebound and like figure out who I wanted to be.
And you know, as hard as those times can be, if you just get through it, which is much easier said than done.
If you're going through hell, keep going.
Oh, my God. Because I remember right before I met my current girlfriend, going to be my future fiance, she's awesome. I remember distinctly laying in my bed, looking up at the ceiling. No girl would date me. And like on dating apps was terrible because nobody would go out with me because I was 5'6". Or I am 5'6". But like, you know what I mean? It was like that classic, like, no, people wouldn't even give me a shot. And I was like, I remember like I liked this girl I met like on vacation one time. And we went back, and then, you know, I find out she's like, yeah, I would go out with Matt, but he's like too short, which is like disheartening as a guy.
Sure.
But at the same time, it's like,
you like to think they're like, but it's like, oh, I don't want to go out with somebody that wouldn't go out with somebody because they're 5'6". Like, that's an unattractive quality.
But I can say that now.
Now, of course.
You know what I mean?
At the time, which, you're like, this is
right. Sucks. At the time, it's like, oh, it's just like constant rejection for, and, you know, so, but I remember just like sitting in my bed looking up at the ceiling and I was like, I effing hate this. Like, it's like,
sure,
holy crap. But, you know, you get through. And, you know, I was very lucky. Like I met my girlfriend and we have a wonderful life together now. But, you know, it's just, it's so hard when you're in it.
Yeah, whatever it is. And like I feel, you know, I feel very fortunate that like through 32 years, like the thing we're talking about is not like much more traumatic.
Of course,
than that.
Of course.
And also like the biggest problem in your life at any point is now like the biggest problem of your life. And so like, particularly if you're a sensitive type, and I think being sensitive in a lot of ways is good. It means you're like attuned to the world.
Sure,
like people who are insensitive to how they're feeling or how other people are feeling, I'm like, oh, like you suck to be around.
Yeah.
You know, like I would rather you like feel things and be honest with yourself about how you're feeling and deal with those things in a mature way, obviously, not to be like crying all the time because life is so hard. Like, but sometimes you like, absolutely, crying's great. Like, get it out and then go about your day or whatever. But I do think, to be honest with yourself, like, oh, yeah, that moment I'm lying in bed, I'm like, no one will date me. If only you could see yourself now.
I know.
You know?
And it's really,
it's like, well, my fiance teaches yoga, so suck on that, life, you know? I do think that's like, and I think, truly, I think like gratitude is like the thing
that's the
that
key,
like,
man. Oh my God.
When it's one of the least attractive qualities for me when I see someone like not be grateful.
Yeah.
Or not to to admit that like life is really hard. It's like, no, I have a lot of good things. And like, whether that's a gratitude journal or just like reminding yourself sometimes like you have good things in your life, like that'll get you through. I remember my sister told me years later when I was writing the show about like, she was like, you called me that night that Tim told you what was going on. And she was like, you just kept saying over and over again, I'm going to be fine. And like,
oh,
I didn't remember
no.
that at all. and usually when someone's saying that repeatedly, like they might not be.
Right.
But it was interesting to hear that that was my reaction, because I didn't remember that, as opposed to like, I'm never going to be fine. Like, I'm glad that my reaction even then was like, this is going to suck. And I'm going to feel real. I'm going to wake up tomorrow and like think about nothing else forever. And I have one more quick anecdote about this, which is about this low point. It was perhaps the most illuminating moment of that year during that low point, or those next 6 months, really, which is it happens in early January. And by like late February, it's like the only thing I'm thinking about. I'm in the shower and I'm just like, I'm thinking about this.
Oh my
and
God.
I'm thinking about the embarrassment of everyone at camp finding out, people messaging me. It's like this, you have to like re-explain it to people over and over again. I went back to camp that next summer and somebody goes, Gabe, how's Kate?
Stop.
Yeah. And I was just like, I don't know. And like, it was a disaster. So like, you're sort of reliving the moment all the time. And I remember I had to go to school one day and I was helping a boy who was blind. Mm-hmm. And I was sort of his like aide for like two periods a day. And I had him during math class. And the first like 2 weeks I had him, it was all like algebra stuff. So he was fine.
Sure.
He just needed something. He would do the math in his head. And the next 2 weeks, the next 3 weeks or whatever, it became like a geometry segment.
Okay.
And so when you're blind and doing geometry, it's like really tricky. So I'm like putting his hand on the shapes.
Okay.
And he's like transforming the shape. So he's like flipping it over and moving it. And I'm sort of like moving his finger across the chart. And he doesn't really have Braille, but he has like sort of like a system to like show him what the shape feels like. And I remember he had this like big big test for that unit. And the test took like, it was a double period and he got extra time. And I remember doing the test with him. And the test takes at least 90 minutes. And I remember getting out of, I remember again being devastated that the test was over because I was like, oh, I just spent 90 minutes not thinking about myself.
Yeah.
And I haven't spent 90 minutes not thinking about myself in 8 weeks.
Yeah.
And so that's another thing. Like, if you're going through it, like, I can't tell you how important it is to like take a walk and go do something.
Oh my God. And especially now, because you just find like people are just inside more. That's how it is. You're on your phone and you're just in your own world. You need to connect with people.
Yeah, even sitting down tonight, I was like, oh, this is going to be great.
Yeah,
I'm glad I got on the PATH train. 100%, you know,
which nobody says, by the way. Nobody has ever, coming from New York, never heard that, but
But like, you're sitting down and you're like, and you're talking about something and you're connecting over something and you're like, oh yeah, like, this is what we're meant to, this is why doing a podcast not on Zoom is really nice.
And my therapist said the opposite of depression is connection.
Mm.
And that has stuck with me for a while.
Yeah.
You know, and so I guess, and this is, I think we're covering a lot, but I guess let's maybe talk to, you know, people out there who might be going through a friendship breakup or who might, you know, be going through a breakup romantically in their formative years. I mean, I know we talked about it already, but what, I guess, lasting piece of advice would you have for them?
Yeah. But I would say every friendship breakup and every romantic breakup, I've had, like, later on, I'm like, oh, that was good. Like, I had a with Tim, I remember I had a friend later on, my friend KR. She said, you guys were always going to break up. You guys were never going to be lifelong friends.
Wow.
And I remember, I was like, no one had ever said that to me before.
Yeah.
And it made me sort of feel like, oh, yeah, we probably maybe would have just, like, grown apart.
Yeah.
And so that's not the... I'm in a fortunate position now, years later, of being like, yeah, it's okay, we're not friends. Like, I'm not, like, pining for that or wishing for that. And so, like, I hope that if you're going through it, one thing I'm working on in therapy right now is, like, not trusting myself that the feelings I'm feeling will, one, be forever, or two, are even correct. Like, because, like, I'm very creative.
No, I love that. That's
and so,
really
like,
good.
We've been talking about, like, oh, I'm very creative. A lot of times that's great. You need to be. And a lot of times it's like, oh, you're just catastrophizing. This, like, little comment doesn't mean X,
and
Y,
how many
Z.
stories are you building in your head that aren't actually
true? But I tell stories.
100%.
And I'm not the best narrator of my own life. So if you're going through it right now, like, perhaps, one, it's nice to go to therapy. And two, like maybe like disconnecting from your own thoughts, like having that sort of zen, like, oh, I'm watching Gabe go through the world. He's wrong about stuff every day.
Right.
This comment my girlfriend said, or like this dynamic I have with a friend. It's like, oh, I'm wrong constantly. So like, don't believe every thought you have.
Yes, that's really, really good advice. I think specifically to friendships too. Mm. One thing that comes to mind is, I can't get into specifics, but I actually went to, it was crazy. I had my college friend group who I really don't talk to anymore. And funny enough, I was actually thinking about this on the way here because, you know, we went on this insane trip in Nashville where somebody pulled a knife on somebody else that was on the trip with us. There was one guy on the trip we were calling, he was like calling women fat at the bar. It was like disgusting behavior. I was 27, 26.
So you're like, I'm 10 years too old.
Right. And it was kind of like
around people.
Yeah, exactly.
Way.
And like, I was kind of this wake up moment where I was like, oh my God, I hate myself when I'm with these people.
Mm.
And they're incredibly selfish. And I'm so much better off now than I was to be in it. But I think about what you said, where it's like, oh, they were never really going to be lifelong friends.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And but to that point, it's like, you know, then you make up like these stories in your head where it's like, then I feel bad because I'm like, oh, they probably also hate me because like I've seen them around town and like they ignore me and it's like whatever.
Sure.
But it doesn't matter.
No,
it's like,
no.
Yeah.
That it's so interesting you say that. In the past, I've had an idea for a podcast called I Gotta Get the Hell Out of Here. And everyone just shares stories of times when they thought, I gotta get the hell out of here.
Oh,
like, I do not
great,
belong
though.
Here.
Oh my God, I
and
love
like
that.
You being on that trip being like, what am
the
I
doing? This new podcast is called Get the Hell
get
Out of
the hell
Here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I gotta get the hell out of here. That's really, it's because like those moments are really revealing.
Yeah.
What you don't like is in some ways so much more revealing to me than what you do
1,000%.
So
yes.
like you hating that group. Is it for me? It's as informative as saying you like diners, where I'm like, those things are equal weight because, like, yeah, it's loud, people are mean, we're in danger.
Yeah,
why were I doing here?
And you know, I found too, it's like one of the guys like would just constantly bully me, and you realize too, it's like these people are supposed to be your friends, they're supposed to bolster you up, and yeah. I was just putting up with it. Because yeah. That was the norm.
Sure.
And so the other thing, too, is like to think about if you're listening is like be aware of that as well, because I had to wait for it to get so bad that I had to exit, you know, that someone had to pull a knife on someone on a trip we were with. And then, you know, so it's
waiting too long. I was just having a talk to a friend about this, about medical stuff, but like he like knew something was wrong and like didn't get help for another 6 months.
God.
You know,
that's also
such
do
a guy
that.
Thing.
Yeah. 100%.
But
good.
Like whatever it is. Like, you know before you make a change
yes.
that you need to.
Yep.
Almost always.
Always.
Like the, you know, that's another book my sister sent me, The Body Keeps a Score. So like,
yes.
You, like, you know, yeah, like he knew he needed dental work done before he like went to go do it. You knew that friend group was rotten in some way, or at least like
yeah.
not for you. That's
no,
like the
100%. And look, if you ask me at the end of the day, I hope they go on to live wonderful lives and
sure,
all that stuff.
Yeah.
I have no ill will towards them.
Yeah.
But it's just like it's
a big Amy Poehler in her autobiography is like good for them, not for me.
Exactly. Yeah.
That
and
idea.
The other thing is too, like I think we should maybe talk about as well. It's like life comes in different phases. You know, it's like you're going to feel the same throughout, but one day you're going to wake up. And your life is going to be completely different than it was maybe 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And you're going to, I compare it to this where it's like, I once lost 37 pounds and I once gained right after that, maybe like 25 back.
Yeah.
If you were to ask me on a day-to-day basis, do I notice a change in my body? I would have said every day, no, absolutely not.
Yeah.
But when
yeah.
you look at it at those different points,
yeah.
it's so different, but you're not going to see it.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
No. That's. Yeah, weight for me is such an interesting thing where, like, sometimes I'll lose a bunch of weight and I'm like, oh, I didn't feel any different.
Yeah, the same.
Or I'll gain
you look
weight.
Great, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
It was funny.
Yeah,
Taylor
right
and I think I saw you at the show the other night and I was like, Taylor, I was like, Gabe's been working out. He looks great.
You know what it is? I moved farther away from the train. And so I have to walk.
That's the most New York thing.
I have to walk 0.7 miles if I want to go anywhere.
Oh, no.
So like
are you in Astoria now?
I'm in Astoria. I live in like a house.
We can cut that if you want. I don't
no,
know if
no,
you want
you
people.
Can tell
right, cool.
Yeah, I'll tell you.
Love Astoria.
Yeah. Believe me, there's no one wants to know. And, or Noah's like trying to find out. But the other thing is like, because I don't have a day job and I'm doing college essay stuff and I'm doing comedy and I'm doing a couple other things. But like, I can kind of like take a nap for the most part, like whenever I want. And like, nobody says this, but like a huge key to losing weight is like not being tired all the time, so you eat chicken fingers in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
like being in a good mood. Totally. And like I can take a nap and walk. There's a smoothie place like 2 blocks from my house. So I'm like, I can take a walk, drink a smoothie, walk back. Like without even trying, I'm getting 8,000 steps.
Yeah. And that's, oh my God.
You spend 2 weeks on Long Island, like we're in Garden City.
Yeah.
Like over the holidays, like I'm like, oh, that'll be a nightmare. Cause like you're driving.
You drive everywhere.
You drive everywhere. Yeah. It's like a struggle to get 2,000 steps. But like here, it's like freezing and you have to walk. I had 17,000 steps yesterday. I wasn't really trying.
Yes. And I remember I once worked an internship. It was my first real corporate job. I was a sophomore in college. And I remember door to door, I took my car, drove to the office. It was like right, my desk was like right by the door in the office. So I would wake up, go to the car, drive to the office, come back. I once took in a full day 950 steps.
Oh, yeah.
It was so I remember looking. I was like, this is a problem.
Yeah,
this
I didn't crack 1,000 steps.
Couldn't crack 1,000.
Now imagine working from home. At least you had to go somewhere.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah.
Have you seen those TikToks of the guy who like life, like a day in the life videos, but the guy like, it's like the most boring life in the world. And so he's like, it's always like putting his laptop in his bag and like walking to his car and going to his job and opening up the laptop and going to lunch and he goes to Carl's Jr. and eats a cheeseburger. And like, every comment is like, this is the most depressing thing in the world. And then like the other half of people are like, in America, like this is a pretty good job. The guy's probably making 90K. He's not working that hard.
Gratitude, right?
Sure.
It's like you need to think of it, right? It's like, probably hopefully pays pretty well then if it's, you know, so.
Yeah, hopefully the guy's doing all right.
Yeah.
But like that's most people's life. I mean, like I've talked about this before, but like I think one of the reasons a lot of people want to do comedy or like be creative is like, oh, it beats having a regular job. You know, like real life sucks. Like it's awful. Like, maybe if you're making a lot of money, like you put up with doing that. But like, you know, I worked in a school for a long time and I liked my job, but I was making $38,000 a year.
That's the,
like waking up every day, like it's miserable.
And it's so funny because it's like when people talk about like wanting to do comedy, and I feel this way in before every show I do, there's a great scene. Have you seen Crashing?
Oh, yeah.
Right before John Mulaney goes on stage in the series finale, he goes, oh my God. It's like they're looking at a theater. It's like 5,500 people.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh my God, I've spent my whole life wanting to be a stand-up comedian, and there's nothing I hate more than stand-up comedy. Which is really, if you feel that way, I feel like about stand-up, you're on the right track.
Yes,
you know what
yes,
I mean?
You it's have
like,
to have that.
Oh God.
You have to have that love-hate relationship. The line we say in my house the most when I do a road gig, sometimes I'll borrow my parents' car. And there's a line in Crashing from season one where Artie Lang wants Pete to open for him in Albany.
Mm-hmm.
And Pete goes, you want me to open for you in Albany? And Artie goes, no, I want your car to open for me. And so whenever I ask to borrow the car, my mom's always like, we want the car to open for you in Albany.
That is great. That is so, so good.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's just freaking gold, man.
Yeah, that's the best.
Dude, I think we covered.
We got it.
I think so,
keep
man.
Keep it crispy.
I mean, no, I wish so bad. Well, I want to talk about some of the stuff you have coming up. So, number one, follow Gabe on social media. Again, I was going to plug it at the top of the episode so people can hear about you.
Please do.
You do great sketches with Alexis Gay, who right? That's her last name.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, you do great sketches with Alexis Gay. I might cut that part out. I feel bad not knowing her last name.
No, that's fine.
But you do great stuff on social media and things like that. What's the best way they can stay up to date with the shows and stuff you're doing?
Yeah, Instagram's the one I am most fluent in.
Okay.
And I post shows on there. And then I have an email list in my
bio. Sign up for the email list.
It's really
list.
Helpful. I only email you when I have something cool coming up.
Yeah, and oh my God.
But I do the new show once a month.
Okay,
at Soho Playhouse. So okay. I'm about to get new dates. And then I'm doing, in April, I haven't announced this yet, but I'm going to do the New York Fringe Festival.
Amazing.
And so I'll have 4 shows or 5 shows in 10 days or something.
Fantastic.
So you can check out the new show, which is Jokes and Stories. And you came to the Work in Progress show the other night, which I really appreciated, and opened.
It was great.
And yeah, so like that's the big stuff going on in my life. And I make these sketches and people seem to like them. So please watch and share and do all that shit. But yeah, and Matt's great. He's working on a solo show. You should go see it.
Appreciate that.
Put it up, man.
I know. We just,
You're well on your way.
Yeah. Gabe's been a collaborator with me on it, and, we just did the 20-minute version, went super well, so I'm trying to just address some more feedback. We're going to do the hour this year. So it's
that's the best goal.
It's going to be...
do it, because once you do it, you'll be able to stop.
I know. It was funny. I was talking with Ben Miller about this, who's another great comedian that people should follow. It was so funny because he's touring this brilliant science show that I think you've opened for him like a few times.
Yeah.
And I was just talking with him. I was like, dude, how'd you like, when you get to like the, you're doing the hour, it's like, where'd you work it out? So he goes, he gave some of the best, I think, also advice ever. He was like, you just do the hour and then you become a guy who does the hour.
Yes.
You know?
Yes,
and I thought that was so profound. Like,
oh my God. When you start comedy, everyone's like obsessed with like the 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And they're obsessed with like, there's at least in, remember when I was really starting in like 2016, 2017 in New York, there was like this like purity to stand up where people were like, I'm not doing this to like be in movies or to act. Like, I'm just doing stand up. And like what you realize very quickly is like every great stand up pivots. Jim Carrey,
yeah,
he's in Oscar nominated movies, like they or Sonic and Knuckles or whatever.
Right.
But like Eddie Murphy, like you know him because he's in movies, not because of Eddie Murphy Raw or whatever.
Right.
So like the idea that like we have to be only one thing, I think, is really limiting.
Right.
And the idea that we only have to be short set people, like, become a person who does the hour, man.
Dude, 100%.
It's so freeing.
Yeah, and also, too, I mean, for anything you're trying to pursue, I think especially now, it's like, how many people or, I hate using the term influencer, but how many people or creators out there that you follow, it's like, they're multifaceted people. They do a lot of different stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, people are open to that now more than ever.
Yeah.
You don't have to be pigeonholed to what you're doing. You could do a ton of stuff.
No.
That's
my,
why
my favorite example is Pat Regan, who's like a, he's a comedian from New York. And he writes for Hacks, and he has a podcast with Kat Cohen, and he's gay, and he's like very dry, very funny. His one of his famous lines is like, "That's what works for our family." He always says like, "And that's what works for our family," and it's like very good. Endearing and very funny. And he like ran track in college, and randomly he'll just start tweeting about like the track world championships, and I'm like, never in a million years would I consider this person to like have a track obsession.
Yeah,
but like people like the tweets, like, 100%. Are people like, I'm like, oh cool, just like. Like, I like Sondheim. You might see my joke about, you know, friend groups and like, oh, I know him from that video. But then if you like Sondheim, like, that's a sort of a deeper cut thing. And maybe that's for somebody else, you know? So, like, yeah, make all types of things. Don't limit yourself.
100%. I know you're a Knicks fan, too, so you'll appreciate this. Like,
yeah.
When Karl Anthony Towns got traded this year, the first person I looked up on Twitter was Sam Morril.
Hilarious.
Because he is a huge Knicks fan.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I was like,
yeah,
I need to know Sam's take on this.
That's so funny.
Which, yeah.
So. No. That, it's, that's really funny you say that. I think sometimes people, like, talk about comedians as, like, philosophers, and I'm always like, we actually have philosophers. Like, they're not the new philosophers. Like, the philosophers are the new philosophers. But I do think, like, there's something entertaining about comedians, which is, I think, why CNN hires them or ESPN or whatever.
Sure.
So it's like, you didn't go to Stephen A. Smith. You didn't go to Bill Simmons or to Zach Lowe, even.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, this funny basketball fan who's, like, more, you're closer to Sam Morril than you are to Zach Lowe. You're not watching hundreds of hours a week of basketball film.
Right, right.
But you're like, oh, I do stand-up, and he does stand-up, and like, I'm sure he has something funny to say about
this.
Yeah,
and Jared Fried does those great segments on ESPN when he's on.
Yes, totally. Yeah.
So yeah, definitely just another piece of advice. But Gabe, this is amazing, man. I can't thank you enough for coming on. First episode.
Yeah,
you did it, man.
I'm in such a better mood now than
I'm so
I was.
Glad. No, I'm so glad, and honestly, oh my God, I set out to do this beginning of the year, and went. There's just so many trips to Best Buy, man. Just so many.
You got the equipment. Let's hope it recorded. We have a backup.
This whole time, I have been so nervous because I'm 90% sure I turned the Zoom recorder on.
Respectfully, you're not a podcaster unless that happens. So, like, that's happened to me before.
Yes.
So, like, just don't worry about it. We have audio.
We got audio
backup
here. The cameras are recording audio, so hopefully we're okay.
Yeah, you're going to be fine.
I think we should be fine, man. We're going to clip it up. But yeah, man, you want to hear? Okay, so you're going to be the very first guest to hear how we're going to close out the show.
Yeah.
This is going to be, hopefully it's not too cheesy.
No.
I need the feedback in real time, if that's cool. So, you know, thank you so much for listening, and hopefully you're a little bit higher now. What do you think?
Pretty good.
What do you think? Not bad, right?
Not bad.
It's a little cute.
Yeah. If it were in a weed shop, it would be better than
know,
a bookstore.
I know. It's the drugs I worry about.
Yeah, that's great.
I think it's fine. You're just being nice.
No. Come on. We're at low points. We lifted each other up.
We had a higher point than you were.
Yeah.
I ran that by Taylor, who's my lovely girlfriend before. She was like, no, that's cute. But maybe she was being nice.
My girlfriend thinks I'm the cheesiest person in the world. We ate at a restaurant the other night, and there was a section of dips. I know this is extracurricular.
No, it's okay.
Podcasting. There was a section that said, I dip, you dip, we rip. And it was like the section where they had like hummus and pita and stuff.
Fun.
And so I said, I dip, you dip, we rip. And she goes, did you just say that like for fun? I was like, no, I was reading the menu. Like, is that who you think I am? You think I'm an I dip, you dip, we rip person?
I would never say that.
I would
that
never
on my
say
own.
That. It's like so cheesy.
Oh my goodness. Anything to plug for her? Because she's great too. I can't wait to meet her.
Yeah, no. She works in theater, but no, nothing for her. She's the kind of person that like works behind the scenes and people will be like, do you work on the show? And she'll be like, no. So we're the opposite in that way.
Nice, dude. No, that's amazing. Gabe, you're an incredible storyteller, amazing comedian, and a great friend.
Yeah, right back at you. Hey,
hopefully
keep it higher.
Keep it higher. Oh, can we? Maybe
you can have the guest say it, the Pete Holmes style.
That would be, I know, but keep it crispy. So iconic at this point.
You know, here's the thing. I will say that I got a Pete Holmes story. This is really extracurricular.
Yeah, go ahead.
I went to go see Pete Holmes at the New Yorker Festival.
Okay.
2018.
Have you met him?
I met him this night.
Oh my God. Okay.
So I'm waiting in line to go to the Pete Holmes panel, Crashing Season 2.
Okay.
And the line is around the block.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how famous is this guy? Like, he has an show on HBO, but like, I'm like, I listen to his podcast, but I'm like, all these comedy fans, and like, they look really well dressed. Like, who are these people who are here to see
They're
Pete
actual
Holmes?
People.
So I get to the, like, they're like moving us through, and I get to the front of the line, and like, who do you here see? I'm like, Pete Holmes. And they're like, oh, this is the line for Sofia Coppola.
Oh, stop.
Like, they're like, the Pete Holmes line is over
stop
there.
It.
And there's like nobody online. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like, and so, which is to say, the idea that like, oh, everyone will know Keep It Crispy, like, I love Pete. No one knows what you're talking about. So like keep it high. Do your thing, man.
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah. But I think we'll run with it for now, and then you never know. So maybe soon we'll be listening back to the first step and we'll be like, can't believe we ended on that.
Yeah, our voices were so high back then. Yeah. For sure.
Our voices were so
high. We're 30.
They get progressively deeper as we get older.
I think when I listen to this at 40, I'm gonna be like, look at how high my voice was.
Oh my goodness. That's dude, that's incredible. Can't thank you enough, dude.
My pleasure.
And hopefully, dude, of course. Hopefully you're in a higher place. Keep it crispy. Incredible, dude. Thank you so much, Gabe.